Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the latest study of data on family incomes in advanced democracies that indicates the once envy of the world, the American middle class, is slipping below Canada, and that America's poor make considerably less than similar families in Canada, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and the Netherlands, the reverse of what was true 35 years ago. Branko Milanovic, formerly a lead economist in the World Bank Research Group and the author of The Haves and Have-Nots, A Brief Idiosyncratic History of Global Inequality, joins us to discuss the price American families are paying for income inequality that is featured in the new website, The Upshot, launched today by The New York Times. Then on this 44th Earth Day, we will speak with Paul Ehrlich, the president of the Center for Conservation Biology and a professor of population studies at Stanford University. We will discuss the state of the planet beset by a record level of CO2 in the atmosphere, the worst in over a million years, and one that is facing projections that the Earth's current population of over 7 billion will reach 9 billion by 2050, placing unsustainable pressure on food supplies already threatened by environmental degradation and global warming. Then finally, we'll explore the possibility of going green before it's too late with Eric Sanderson, a senior conservationist at the World Conservation Society and author of Terra Nova, The New World After Oil, Cars and Suburbs. We'll discuss his article at CNN, Want Green Cities, Lose the Cars, and look into the Earth Day theme of green cities and how biking, walking and light rail could do away with the need for cars. And joining us now is Branko Milanovic, formerly a lead economist in the World Bank Research Group and now a visiting professor at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He is the author of The Haves and Have-Nots, A Brief Idiosyncratic History of Global Inequality, and is a researcher on the new report from the Luxembourg Income Study Group that is the basis for an article, The American Middle Class is No Longer the World's Richest, featured in the new website, The Upshot, launched today by The New York Times. Welcome to Background Briefing, Branko Milanovic.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And it seems, Branko Milanovic, that income inequality is very much in the zeitgeist now. I don't know the extent to which it will become an election issue in this year's midterm elections, but certainly when you consider that Thomas Piketty's new book is the number one bestseller at Amazon, do you get this sense that people are becoming more and more aware of this issue? And the New York Times website that was The Upshot that was launched today, of course, features your work and the works of others rather prominently.
Well, yes, indeed. Actually, as you know, inequality has been becoming, it's been a zeitgeist for a while. I mean, every year we hear there is like really huge concern with inequality. Davos people talk about that, rich people talk about the politicians, you know, authors and so on. But it just keeps on going and becoming more, you know, more and more important issue. And obviously now with Thomas Piketty's book and this new results that was published today in the New York Times, it seems sort of become a bigger issue probably than ever. I mean, certainly nobody, I think, can remember in living memory that the inequality of income or wealth has become such a big issue.
Well, we've always had the American dream and the Horatio Alger myth, and there's always been the assumption that Americans are the best off in the world, and the American middle class has been in many ways the envy of the world up until now. So that seems to me the significance of this new data that comes from the Luxembourg Income Study Group. Give us a sense of where the American middle class used to be and where it is today.
You know, this is actually a very important finding. You know, people knew that, you know, at some vague level, and there were comparisons between the U.S. and other countries, and there were issues about mobility, intergenerational mobility in the U.S. But let me just put it very specifically, what is the huge contribution of this report? I think it's twofold. First, actually, it puts really the level of income, real income, because this is income adjusted for the differences in price levels that people in different countries face, puts the American middle class very clearly in a position it's positioned within other rich countries. Now, the middle class is still on the top. It's actually now being joined by Canadian, or maybe slightly overtaken by the Canadian, and of course by Luxembourg, but Luxembourg is a very special case. But what is the interesting part is that actually everybody below the middle class, which means everybody in the first decile, which is the bottom 10% of people, the second poorest 10%, and so on, has been overtaken by several rich countries. So really, people who are not being overtaken in terms of income are really only people at the top. And if you look at the evolution over the last 30 years, practically every 5 years, U.S. would lose sort of leadership in income terms of one income group, starting from the poorest and now reaching the middle. So this is actually very, I think, striking result.
But so this, the poor in the United States are even worse off than the middle class by comparison to other advanced democracies. A family at the 20th percentile of the income distribution in this country makes significantly less money than similar families in Canada, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and the Netherlands. And that's the reverse of what was true 35 years ago. But when you do these comparisons, I would think that in these social democracies like Canada, Sweden, Norway, Finland, Netherlands, Australia, etc., where they have enormous social services compared to what we have here in the United States, so all we have essentially is Social Security and Medicare, both of which are under political threat in this country. So do you factor in the fact that poor people in Sweden, for example, get 6 weeks vacation, full health care, pregnancy leave, child care, all kinds of social services?
No, actually, you know, the results are in that sense are even, how should I say, less favorable to the position of the U.S. middle class and American poor, because what we don't factor in a study like that, it's too long to explain for methodological reasons why we cannot do it, but we don't factor number of hours of work. For example, the point that you made about a six-week vacation, we also do not factor in state-provided education and health. So if these things were actually included, and that's very difficult, as I said, to include it on a comparative basis, actually the American slippage would be even greater. What is interesting here is that if you really even disregard these things, you still have several countries, you have listed them, like the Netherlands, Finland, Canada, which actually have overtaken the U.S. in the bottom half of the income distribution. And slightly creeping up, actually, if you project this, what has happened over the last 30 years, if you project it for another 10 or 15, then they might actually go into the higher income levels and be in the leadership there as well.
Again, I'm speaking with Branko Milanović, who's formerly a lead economist in the World Bank Research Group and now a visiting professor at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He's the author of The Haves and Have-Nots, A Brief and Idiosyncratic History of Global Inequality, and is a researcher on the new report from the Luxembourg Income Study Group that is the basis for an article, The American Middle Class is No Longer the World's Richest, featured in the new website, The Upshot, launched today by the New York Times. So in terms of the rich in this country who are clearly the beneficiaries of these trends that have taken place over the last 30 and 40 years, they pay lower taxes than the rich in just about everywhere else on the planet, don't they?
Well, they do, you know, and I think the significance of this report is also, or simply putting these findings in front of you, is also to realize one thing in conjunction with what we have seen actually in Thomas Piketty's work and the importance of the top 1%, which again pays relatively low taxes in the U.S. compared to the rest of the rich countries, is that actually the rationale or the narrative which is often used, which says, yes, of course, there are really some very rich people, but having these rich people is a condition, necessary condition, for the middle class to be really also doing well and to be rich. That really rationale is not there, because if it were the case, then U.S. middle class would not be overtaken by the North European or West European middle classes.
So the point being that in the United States, the wealth is not redistributed as much to the poor from the rich as it is in other countries.
Well, yes. I mean, the facts are that the rich in the United States are richer than the equivalent rich in the countries like Sweden or Finland or Germany or Italy or practically any other country. Now, partly you can say, well, of course, they're richer because the U.S. on average is richer. But that rationale is undermined by the results when you see that the median person in the U.S. is actually now not any longer richer than, say, a median person somewhere in Europe. So this is the problem. Actually, it highlights the issue that you have really the top 1%, which is extremely rich by historical standards, within the United States, because they are basically back in terms of the share of total income that they take back to the situation of 1928. So we have really had a sort of a return to the Gilded Age.
So in terms of other countries, we have right next door Canada, where the Canadian middle class are doing better than the United States, at least if they're on a par, but heading in a more positive direction. That seems to be the headline from this new article in The Upshot, launched today by the New York Times.
Well, yes, I actually talked to several people from Canada. Obviously, they are very, how should I say, almost incredulous and very keen to know how did it come that actually Canadian middle class is now richer or on a par with the American middle class. And, of course, they are not very happy with the evolution of the middle class in Canada. You know, we are not actually anywhere in the Western world or in the rich world. The middle class did not have a great time over the last 20 years. So there is, like, dissatisfaction everywhere. But comparatively, when you look at Canada, it has grown by 1%, 1% and a half per year over these 20 years. And in the U.S., it has really grown almost by 0.1%, so almost nothing. So in other words, you know, there is a difference. You know, it's not a significant difference, but it's important. It makes a difference after 10 or 15 or 20 years.
And it's worth noting, of course, that Canada has single-payer comprehensive health care for all of its citizens. And as we pointed out before, that's not factored in these numbers, but health care is one of the most punishing costs that the average American family, particularly the middle-class families, have to pay.
No, indeed, that's actually not included. And, of course, we look at disposable income, which means, as you said, actually, that's income after taxation. We do not look... And we, of course, adjust for the level of prices. But, you know, one thing which is also difficult to adjust is if you have catastrophic events or if you have, you know, health care emergencies that you have to pay, obviously that can actually totally throw you off balance. So, in other words, these are the elements which would make the position of the American middle class relatively worse to the other countries if we were to include them.
And what's the sense of the poor being so much worse off than the rest of these other advanced European countries? Is there a political constituency in this country anymore for the poor and the middle class? I mean, how do you factor in that in your study on a global basis? In other words, I think the fundamental difference with social democracies is compared to the United States is that people in social democracies vote for politicians who provide social services in exchange for the taxes they pay. We seem to be an anomaly here in the United States where we vote for all kinds of other reasons like abortion and family values and other things. And we, as I pointed out earlier, we don't get very much in return for our tax dollars. So is there can you make a correlation between the political influence of the rich in our politics and the political influence of the middle class and the poor in other social democracies?
Let me make like 2 points. I mean, the first one, you asked me about the position of the poor, relative position. If you make like a very sort of simple-minded division of the, you know, people by income in the United States, you say, okay, they are poor, middle class, and the rich. It has been known for a while that actually U.S. middle class has been falling behind equivalent middle classes in other democracies. So that was kind of known. But I don't think it was such a big issue because politically, the facts are, and we have now actually empirical studies showing that really political preferences of the poor don't really matter very much in the political process because they don't vote, they don't have an influence, they don't actually have lobbying power, so they really didn't matter that much. However, with the fact now, which is known, that the middle class is also doing relatively poorly, again, compared, it's still a very rich, the richest in the world, the second richest in the world middle class, but it's still doing relatively poorly compared to the others, then I think political dynamics might change, because when you have an awareness among, I suppose, 40% of the population that things are really not going well, politically they could become quite quite powerful. So, you know, we know that the political voice of the middle class is relatively, you know, limited, but I think things might change. In a democracy, they might change.
But is there a correlation or an understanding that the fact that the rich have done so much better than everybody else in America over the last few decades and continue to do so, is there a correlation between their influence over our politics and their success?
Well, yes, there is actually. I can think of at least two studies, because I really don't want just to talk about something which is my impression or your impression or somebody else's impression, but there is a study by Larry Bartels, who done several years ago from Princeton, I believe, who actually looks at preferences or like issues that people care by income level, and then looks at the voting pattern of the senators or representatives who represent them. And of course, not surprisingly, he finds that actually for a given constituency, the concerns of the rich actually have six times greater influence on the voting behavior of the senators than the, you know, issues that are of concern to the poor. So that was an empirical study. Recently, there was another empirical study with a similar results, you know, saying the U.S. is in oligarchy in the sense that actually it is really the rich that influence political process, decision, rules, laws, and so on. So there are empirical results that we really can draw upon now to when we say things like the rich really have a disproportionate influence.
Well, but it does seem that the difference is because of this study, Branko Milanović, that you've been involved in with data from the Luxembourg group that indicates that by comparison, the middle class in America, which was the envy of the world up until now, is slipping and has slipped behind Canada, and that the poor are so much better, worse off than the poor are in other advanced democracies. The New York Times report today in their new website, The Upshot, says that governments in Canada and Western Europe take more aggressive steps to raise the take-home pay of low- and middle-class income households by redistributing income. So that, to me, is the smoking gun.
Well, it is true. You know, I think that there is now an overwhelming body of evidence. You know, we talked about the middle class mostly here. Then we have, of course, the studies which look at the position of the very rich, top 1%, top 5%, top 0.1%. Then we have all these empirical studies also that talk about the influence of the rich on the political process. And finally, we have one thing that you mentioned before, is this relationship between inequality of opportunity and inequality of income. You know, and there was this very strong belief, as you know, in the American dream, that if you have inequality today, maybe, it is not going to be the same people who are going to remain rich. In other words, it is a little bit like one sort of metaphor is like a hotel. You know, you have different people living, I mean, staying at different floors in a hotel, but it changes every night. So the argument was, well, it really doesn't matter if they are rich today because there will be somebody rich in the next generation. But what we find now empirically, that too is not really exactly true, that actually mobility across generations in terms of income in the U.S. is no better than in, you know, many European countries. So then you have really a conundrum. You ask yourself, like, if there is high inequality today, what does justify that high inequality? Because it really doesn't lead to inequality of opportunity. It makes opportunities more difficult for the poor.
Well, just in terms of the future, just in closing, Branko Milanović, there's also a recent study by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that finds that younger Americans are not keeping pace. Those between 16 and 24 rank near the bottom among rich countries, well behind their counterparts in Canada, Australia, Japan and Scandinavia, and close to those in Italy and Spain. So that's our future, right?
Well, you know, on many of these indicators, the one that I mentioned, for example, the, you know, inequality of opportunity, intergenerational transmission of wealth, U.S. ranks really like Mediterranean countries, like Southern European countries. And this was not normally a comparator for the United States because the U.S. obviously was for last century or maybe even a century and a half richer. Much richer. You had, of course, large immigration into the United States from Italy or, you know, even Spain. So clearly things have changed because compared to the Nordic countries, to the Scandinavian countries or Northern Europe, U.S. is slipping. And even that which show, we see that in the statistics that you mentioned as well.
Well, Branko Milanović, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Well, it was a pleasure to be there. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. I've been speaking with Branko Milanović, who's formerly a lead economist in the World Bank Research Group and now a visiting professor at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. He's the author of The Haves and Have-Nots, A Brief and Idiosyncratic History of Global Inequality, and is a researcher on the new report from the Luxembourg Income Study Group that is the basis for an article, The American Middle Class is No Longer the World's Richest, featured in the new website, The Upshot, launched today by the New York Times. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking on this 44th Earth Day with the ecologist Paul Ehrlich.